Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
You can catch his podcast, The Top Step, which airs weekly on Root Sports. It's Ryan Roland Smith joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Doing fantastic. What about you guys?
Absolutely fantastic. Pretty nice to start this series with a win, considering they've lost their last eight. I didn't realize it went eight, two games back at the end of 2022 to the Rangers. It was maybe not like a, you know, an offensive explosion, but it certainly was a phenomenal day from Logan. What'd you see from him?
Yeah, I think, first of all, just back to the fact that they're going back to Texas, you know, that really does linger too, especially when you're watching a team in your division who, goes to the World Series, wins it. You watch all those celebrations, everything else. You're talking to Mitch Garver and everything else. So that was a massive win besides the fact that it was just a one, you know, obviously one win. It kind of set a precedent, which was what we kind of saw him against the Astros. But, you know, you mentioned Logan Gilbert, man. I speak so highly about him. I have the last couple of years, but the fact that, you know, the guy, let's not forget, before he got to the big leagues, there were like command issues, right? He's 6'6", and he really had to figure out, because he had stuff, right? He's 6'6", tons of extension on the release and everything else. But just how, like last night, for example, three walks early, and then he gets into some rough counts. That first inning, Nate Lowe, he's got a 2-0 count. He's struggling with his command. And now all of a sudden we see this cut fastball, which is such a weapon, not because it's a big strikeout weapon, but the fact that when you go 1-0, 2-0 on a hitter, you have that safety net. It's like, all right, I'm going to throw this cut fastball. You're sitting on something straight, and I'm going to throw this, going to get off the barrel. And he did that a couple times last night, which was really, really, it was just a bailout for him. The fact that Logan Gilbert continually finds ways to fix some of the things that he needs to fix. Like last year, when he was behind in counts last year, hitters were hitting like a good 450, 460 against him. So I'm just so impressed. And look, you know, Luis Castillo, George Kirby above him, they're really good. But just going into this season, I kept saying that there's going to be something here with Logan, whether it's an all-star appearance or he kind of sets a mark here with innings or whatever it may be. But just last night, man, he just took it to another level last night with that start, because he was getting bad counts. Now he has another weapon to get him out of those bad counts.
Yeah, Ryan, that was going to be my question, is just how difficult is it to kind of pivot? I would assume you go in with a plan, you look at the order over there with the Rangers, say this is how I want to attack, and then a few innings in, one or two innings in, things just aren't working for you. Is it difficult to do that, to make that switch?
Yeah. Yeah, hey, for me it was. my numbers show that. But no, it really is, man, and especially just what I was talking about, and it's a really good question, because – like I said, I go back 2 years ago, right? With Logan, he had that big 12-6 curveball, which we don't really see a whole lot from him anymore. And that slider was just really flat. It stayed on plane a ton. So if you're in a situation, if you're Logan Gilbert, he would get into some rough counts and just have to rely so heavily on climbing the ladder with the fastball. And then what the teams do, they started just sitting straight dead red. And I think last year, too, I know he introduced the split, but if he didn't have that slider last year, he was in trouble. And now this year, just watching him, it is not easy to introduce a new pitch. It's not easy when you're in a 2-0 count facing the Texas Rangers with runners on, regardless of who you're facing, whether it's Corey Seager, Nate Lowe, whoever it may be. It's really difficult. Like, I want to make that very clear. And just watching him just... straight, all right, here, I'm going to throw this pitch middle in. I'm going to challenge you with this pitch. I've barely thrown it. Look, it's only been 3 or 4 weeks where he's thrown it in when the lights are on. And just to be able to have that presence of mind. And then as the game went on, what he did was able to, in between innings, you can totally tell just by chatting with him, in between innings, he just comes up with ways to make those tiny little mechanical adjustments. And then as the game went on, you noticed all of a sudden he's 0-1, 0-2, and then it's just straight, good night. It's just too hard to hit, especially when you get second, third time through the lineup. You've seen the cutter for the first time if you're the Texas Rangers. You know about that split, all those lefties in the lineup. It makes it really difficult against a guy like Logan. So, like I said, I'm just so impressed despite everything he's doing this year.
Hey, looking outside the Mariners for a minute, Blake Snell had a bad start to the season. He just landed on the IL today. We just saw that news about a half hour ago. We all wondered locally whether the Mariners should sign him. He was basically campaigning for them to do so. Right now, the Mariners' rotation looking pretty good. Is this kind of a last laugh moment? Not that you'd laugh at someone's injury, for Jerry and Justin?
I think, well, I think going back in the offseason, and you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if Blake's from here. Him and I have a really good relationship, so I've talked to him throughout the whole winter. And I'm not going to obviously dive into the conversations he had trying to get, because you're right, he really did. He loves his Mariners, put it that way. I mean, at the trade deadline last year, he was texting me saying, hey, man, what do you think? Is there any chance? I'm like, I'm the wrong person to be text messaging. Like, I've got no idea. And I'll ask Justin Hollander in passing, and he's like, he just kind of like laugh it off because it's just funny. Like, I'm like, why is he texting a buddy to ask about that? So you know how much he loves the Seattle Mariners and he wants to be home and everything else. And so this winter was interesting. As we all know, the Mariners kind of put a little bit of a stop when it came to spending and long-term and everything else, like a lot of teams around the league. And so, you know, was it a blessing in disguise? Maybe. I think the biggest thing with Blake, though, you mentioned the injury, I put that separately, and I'll get to that in a second. But I think with what the Mariners looked at, they said, all right, if we don't have to give up a Bryce Miller or Brian Wu or even a George Kirby to try and make a splash, because we know all the fans, us included, wanted to see a splash. And I said all winter, I'm like, the only way you're going to make a splash here and get some big name is if you give up someone in that rotation. And then they kind of came up with a plan to not do that. So that's that last laugh. Now, on Blake with the injury, I'll be honest with you, when he announced, when he signed with the Giants, and again, this is just from personal experience with him, when he signed with the Giants, I was shocked when he said, I will be ready to go the second week of the season. Because way too fast. And now he's on the IL. He hasn't looked good pitching-wise because he's just rushed right into a regular season. And I'll be honest with you, let's say he was a Seattle Mariner. Let's say he signed late, kind of like Stanek did in the bullpen. Let's say the Mariners got a really good deal on Blake Snell because maybe his starter dropped or something. I promise you, and just knowing Pete Woodworth, I highly doubt they would have pushed him into pitching in that second week.
Yep.
So it'd be a completely different Blake Snell.
That's a really good point.
Ryan, I was watching you guys last night. By the way, man, suit game on point, dog. I'm going to give you some love with the suit, man. Looking clean last night. but you said something that was interesting, and it made me go back and kind of look at the box score and all that stuff again. You said, look, the middle of the lineup didn't really produce, but they had some good at-bats. For the people, you know, who didn't watch or understand what you were talking about, what exactly do you mean by that?
Well, you know, it's really easy. You know, you mentioned looking at the box score, and I was looking at it too. I was like, oh, man, come on. Like, you want the middle of that lineup to do some damage, right? And Cal Raleigh's up there in the three hole. And I don't really want to see him hitting third. I know he's heating up, but you want to have that depth. And so I was watching as the game went on, and it was a situation where if put it this way, if, and again, the results weren't there. I get it. But what I meant by that was this, man. If you're taking Ofers in the middle of the lineup and it looks very similar to that first, second week of the season in regards to, you know, what we saw, a ton of swing and miss, chasing Polanco, like, all over the place, like, not looking like the guy who they traded for. Mitch Garver off to a bad start. The at-bats were just better. And I just think that there was some productive at-bats. And I know that sounds lame because you want to see guys just, you know, put up a 10 spot every night. But just watching the approach and paying attention to what some of those guys were doing. Like, for example, Mitch Haniger had an at-bat. Look, I know he grounded out, but he comes in and Urena was pitching. He throws a slider. Then he expands the strike zone. Mitch chases. He's down 0-2. Well, all of a sudden, he turns that at-bat into a 3-2 count. I'm telling you, now, not Mitch per se, but some of the guys in the middle of that lineup, when you watch guys go 0-2 like that and then just kind of give in and start chasing that slider, that's different. But when you have a situation where guys are working a count to 3-2, and then guess what? The Texas Rangers, not to go down a rabbit hole here, have to use four guys in the bullpen in the first game when they've got Dane Dunning, who essentially is their best arm out of the best rotation piece, and you knock him out early because of some of those at-bats, getting it deep into that bullpen, it just sets you up to take a 2 out of 3 as opposed to the Texas Rangers being strongest game 2 and game 3.
Hey, when we're taking another look at the offense here, you've got Cal with his 6th home run of the season, his 4th home run in 5 games, Julio getting his 1st of the season yesterday. Talk about what you're really liking from this group. And feel free to focus just on Cal. We were talking about him all morning.
Yeah, well, first of all, good to see him. Like I said, and I'm not knocking him by any means by saying putting him in the 3-hole. I mean, he deserved that last night. I know Scott Service is trying to tinker with that lineup a little bit. But look, I mean, I've said it 1,000 times. I know everyone says this, but when you have, and JP, I'll throw JP in the mix too, but when you have Julio, doing what he's doing, it's just a different energy. And, I know, Bump, you were talking about I heard you talking about your Lakers basically aging out and everything else. But, so it's one of these things where Julio Rodriguez, he's going to be here for a long time. And whether he is, 25 years old or 40 years old, when he is doing what he's doing, I guarantee you it's going to change the offense. Now, I know this team is having success because of the starting pitching, like whether they got a 1 in the last 7 games or whatever it may be. But just having him spending more minutes on a baseball field and outside the dugout is such a massive boost. It just gives you this sense subconsciously that good things are happening with that lineup. And, since the road trip, he's hitting, 452, starting to get the ball off the ground way more. I mean, he was 186 the first 59 at-bats. So, and he has, and by the way, a massive homeless, 88 at-bat homeless streak before he finally got on the board. So that was massive. And speaking about being in the dugout too, just, the whole carry-on with the Trident, it's a team thing, that team chemistry. He's in there hugging it. I just think that when Julio starts to go off, saw that last year again, it just has that ripple effect down the rest of this lineup. So good to see. Pitching is the foundation, yes, but, man, they're in a great spot coming into May.
Now, it's early. I think it's important that we say it's early even when they start winning because when they're losing and we say it's early, people be on our head. So, yes, they're winning now, but it's early. When you look at the division, I'm looking at the Astros and saying there's no way they will continue to play like this. You look at just the numbers that some of these guys are putting up, and you look at pitching and say that has to be the issue. Do you think the Astros will figure this thing out eventually and start to turn a corner?
Honestly, I'm looking at this now. Go back a week ago, like speaking of the Houston Astros, I'll use them first. I'll get to the Rangers in a second. But with the Houston Astros, I mean, look, they're 11 games under 500. They haven't done that since, May of 2016, right?
Wow.
And a week ago, I would have said, hey, no, they're going to be fine. They're going to be a factor. I still say that. However, you've got a new manager, and I was doing some digging yesterday. I was on High Heat this morning, so I knew I had to talk about the Astros, AL West, and everything else. I was doing some digging last night. I started asking around. A buddy of mine who's with the Astros, he just said, Joe Espada, the new manager, he was on the bench. He was a coach for them, right? And, Bump, you know this, man. When you have someone who goes to a sort of a higher-ranking position in the coaching world, they try and change the way they interact with players. And they're trying to do the right things. It's good intentions. But some, and I'm not knocking him as a manager, but some individuals are better off in their role as an assistant coach as opposed to a head coach or a manager. What I feel like in this situation now, first of all, they're pitching. I know Verlander's coming back, but JP France just looks like a deer in headlights pitching right now. Christian Javier's on the IL. You've got a brand-new manager who I guarantee is trying to pull in, do those team meetings, and he's trying to have a certain tone to him that's just not resonating with some of these veteran players. And I feel like they've got way more issues than I thought maybe a week ago, which is a great thing. Now, the Texas Rangers, I think they're going to hover around, and they're going to go hard at the trade deadline as well. And, yes, I know it's only April. Cal Raleigh laughed it off last night in the post-game interview. I get it. But when you have a start like this with a brand-new manager, with all the issues you have on a pitching standpoint, we saw this with the Mariners in regards to the Houston Astros, they may be in trouble. They may be too far gone by the time they start heating up.
Make sure you catch Ryan's podcast, The Top Step, which airs weekly on Root Sports. Really fascinating stuff on the rest of the AL West there, Ryan. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. All right, we're going to talk X's and O's football with Michael Bumpus, and then we are going to get back to baseball. A really interesting breakdown on Bryce Miller from Xavier Scruggs from MLB Network. He's going to join us in 15 minutes. Right now, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver
First
Michael
down,
Bumpus.
There's a new team in the mix when it comes to drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. Who is the team, and how would they need to move up to get him?
Yeah, everybody wants a piece of Marvin if you're not looking for a quarterback. And it's fitting that this team is interested in drafting Marvin Harrison because his dad used to play for him. Indianapolis Colts are saying, look, we are interested in drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. What do they have to do to get up there? You got to get in front of the LA Chargers because I believe that if Arizona trades their spot or doesn't pick Marvin Harrison, which I think they would if they're at the number four spot, you got to get in front of those guys. So what do they have? First round, they got a 15th pick. Second round, 46th overall. Third round, 82nd overall. Fourth round, 117th overall. Obviously, you got to give up that first round pick, and you got to throw some sauce in there, too. Maybe give them a third round as well. But I like this. How crazy would it be to have Marvin Harrison Jr. go play for the Colts and his dad play for the Colts and put up some crazy numbers? You pair him with Anthony Richardson, who we're still waiting to see what he can really be. Only played in four games last year. This is just a fun story. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that there are other teams with more to offer Arizona and the Chargers, but the fact that the Colts are putting it out there again, who knows how real this is, because there's one day before the draft. Everybody's going to say anything. Stacey, I'm drafting you number 16 overall.
Thanks.
With the Seattle Seahawks.
Thank you.
I can say anything. Anyone's going to say anything, but I saw the story. You are an athlete. I saw the story, and I thought it was pretty cool. Will it happen? I don't think it's going to happen, but they do have something to offer if they're trying to get some picks.
Do you think John Schneider would consider drafting me? I feel like I still got it.
I think he would employ you. Draft you? Oh, no.
Okay.
Employ you, though.
Okay, that's fine.
Put
second
you on the
down.
Payroll.
He's like, I don't know what she's doing here. Jaden Daniels said something, and you feel it's the wrong approach. Tell us more.
Oh, man, he said he wants to be a better rushing QB than Vic and Lamar Jackson.
Okay.
And yet I feel like he has the capabilities to be one of the better rushing quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm saying, look, dude, don't put that type of pressure on yourself and don't put yourself in that box. Lamar Jackson is still fighting that stigma. Oh, he's just a running quarterback. They forget the fact that my man threw for, 30-something touchdowns one year. They forget the fact that he had one of the highest QBRs at some point. He can throw the football. Is he a better runner? That's debatable. Probably is a better runner. But you don't want to put yourself in that box. You go out there and say, I'm just going to be the best quarterback that I can be. I think that he can be a good runner. I think that he runs a little high. I also think that he needs to add some weight to that frame if he really wants to do that. I just don't like that because people are going to run with this. You put it out there, the media is going to run with it. The scouts are going to run with it. You limit yourself when you do that. Being a mobile quarterback is just part of being a quarterback these days. So just stick with that. I'm excited to see what he does in this league. Just be careful what you put out there because the media will run with it like I'm doing right now. I'm trying to deter you, Jaden, if you're listening.
They'll run with it like Lamar and Michael Vick.
Boom.
That's a really good point, though, the idea of, like, you're already in that box.
Yeah.
You're going to find yourself fighting against it. If you have a better career than them on the ground, that will show itself.
Yeah.
And it'll come out.
Don't put yourself there.
Third down. What's something we may see in the NFL for the first time since 2016?
Are you ready for this? I felt
probably
like this
not.
Day would never come. I felt like maybe it'd be 2030 until we saw this day.
Okay.
The Rams can actually make a pick in the first
what?
Round. Since 2016, they can make a pick in the first round. We'll
totally
see, forgot see if they trade out of it or whatnot. But I'm like, look, Rams, it's been a while since y'all been
here.
It's been
2016.
A while. Who they drafted in 2016?
Goff.
Jared Goff. In 2017, they traded the 2017 pick to the Titans.
Wow.
2018 pick to the Patriots. 2019 to the Falcons. 2020 to the Jags. 21 to the Drags, both for Ramsey. 2022 and 2023 to the Lions for Matthew Stafford. The Lions have capitalized on that whole deal there. The Jaguars have been okay. Falcons have done absolutely nothing. Patriots have been irrelevant since Tom left. And the Titans are up and down, smiles and frowns. It worked out for the Rams eventually, right? Because they did win the Super Bowl in 2021. I'm just sitting there and saying, there's no way Sean McVay has an opportunity to be active on the first day, and he's going to let this thing go. I'm interested. You lost Aaron Donald to retirement. Obviously, you have Kobe Turner over there who's going to replace him. You should be okay in that department. You got Cooper Kupp still at the wide receiver spot. Still got Matthew Stafford. A good run game. Where are you going to go with this pick? I'm interested, but I'm happy for the Rams, man. It's been a while. We used to make fun of these guys every single year, and the day has finally come to where they have an opportunity to get into the first round and make some noise.
Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but are you going to be happy for the Rams if they take someone like Dallas Turner?
No, I won't. I'm happy at the thought of them picking in the first round, but then you come back to reality and realize they are in our division. And honestly, right now, it's got to be the Niners and Rams projected to battle it out in the division. And then, you know, the Arizona Cardinals and the Seahawks trying to figure things out. But, 2016, the last time. 2016, my youngest child was 2 years old. She is now 10.
2016 box office. What was the top movie in 2016? That's the last time the Rams had a first-round pick. It was Captain America Civil War.
Matt, great movie. Amazing movie. One of Marvel's best.
Fourth down. Who's going to play a huge role when and if things do get tough for Mike McDonald during the season?
It's
going to
get tough, right? We assume that's just part of changing things here in an organization. And yesterday we talked about where's the pressure going to be. John Schneider, is it going to be Mike McDonald? I think we settled that both are going to have their time to feel that pressure. We forgot. John Schneider hired all these young coaches, but he also hired an OG in Leslie Frazier. And I think that when things do get tough, Mike McDonald is going to lean on Leslie Frazier. He's been in the league for a long time. He was on that 85 Bears team, of course. He's been a coordinator. He's been a defensive back coach. He's been in the NFL as a coach since 1999. My man has some years in his league. The Indianapolis Colts, the Vikings, the Bucks, the Ravens, the Bills, and now the Seahawks. So, yes, things are going to get tough, but I think that John did a great job either influencing Mike McDonald to hire Leslie Frazier or just saying, look, you need someone on the staff who has been around the block several times. So I look at the situation, I go, yeah, it's going to be rough. You're going to lose a game that people expect you to win. You are going to have some procedure issues when it comes to offense and defense. Things are going to go bad. Who can you lean on? You lean on your coaches, obviously, because you hired these guys, but you also lean on the godfather of this organization when it comes to coaches right now, Leslie Frazier, and just pull from that knowledge. The best thing I can encourage young people to do, sit and just talk to someone who had you by 30, 40 years if you can. And just let them talk. Ask questions, let them talk. Let them talk more than you're asking questions, man, because they will bless you with a whole bunch of knowledge. So I expect Mike McDonald to do that with Leslie Frazier.
It is one of those names that we keep not overlooking, but you're right, that will probably become hugely important later in the season. And you have a young, inexperienced coaching staff and then someone who's been there, done that.
Yeah.
Really good mix there. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. All right, we are getting back to baseball, back to the Mariners, and specifically back to this starting rotation. Xavier Scruggs of MLB Network is really high on Mariners pitching. He did a breakdown of Bryce Miller last week for MLB Network. We're going to talk about it next. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
You know, you wouldn't think someone would be perfectly fine after taking a 109-mile-per-hour home run off the dome, but that is what happened last night in an LSU baseball game. There was a fan that was interviewed afterwards on ESPNU. We're going to play you that sound coming up next. Before we get to it, let's talk about a great start to the season for Bryce Miller. Earlier in the show, I said one way that you can tell that the Mariners pitching is really, really on one right now, in the best way, is that if I said, who's having the best start? Someone might say Logan. Someone might say Bryce. Someone might say, I love what Castillo has been able to do turning this thing around. Like, good for Luis. There are a couple different answers out there. What have you loved? We just talked with Bryce yesterday. What have you loved in not just his season, but in just talking to him?
I love his demeanor. I'm a vibe type of guy.
I could see Cali vibe.
I can see him just chilling. Yeah. And we did some research. We looked at his TikTok, and you described him perfectly. It's like you're an extrovert, but an introvert at the same time. Like, you kind of, as a pitcher, you kind of have to be an introvert on game day. Mm-hmm. But after that, like, who are you? And it seems like he's able to kind of fit in any type of group he's around, which I like. Also, I love just the adjustments. We talk about Logan making adjustments. Mm-hmm. We're going to hopefully talk to Xavier here soon. Is it difficult to make adjustments on the fly when you're pitching. I know as a football player, we make adjustments, but it's a bit more physical, right? There's more things I can do off the line and running down the field rather than just being on the mound and tossing a ball. So, yeah, adjustments, his demeanor, the development. You know, we talk about the Mariners and how they develop arms, and he's a perfect example of that. And he's holding his own in a cast to where you got some hitters. You know, you look at this cast, like you got a Tom Cruise in that cast, you got a Denzel, you know, you got some dudes who doing some stuff.
And that's quite the lineup, right? If you have a Tom and a Denzel.
But he blends right in. You know, he blends right in and he holds his own. So development, adjustments, and just being able to be himself and be comfortable in his role.
Well, speaking of adjustments, Xavier is in the middle of a segment with MLB Network. We're pulling him from MLB Network for a little interview. I don't know what he's doing. He had to move something around. So he's going to join us in 30 minutes.
Right.
He has watched a ton of film on Bryce and really, really likes one specific adjustment that he's made. So he's going to tell us what that is coming up in 30. Right now, we're just going to get to the timeline. So let's go.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Now, I already teased our first story in The Timeline, which is that fan that took the 109-mile-per-hour home run right off the dome at an LSU game. Turns out he's fine, thankfully, and even better, he's got a great post-game press conference with ESPNU. Take a listen.
This is another one. A liner way back. Top row, left field bleachers. Tommy Wade. Her up again and kiss that baby goodbye.
Boy, that ball was a rocket shot. Now we got to turn our attention to that fan out in left field who took a Tommy White one to the noggin.
He sure did. His name's Corey. Here's what he said.
I mean, it was on a rope, and you know, I've been carrying this glove with me for years, and I was like, okay, now's my time. I got one coming, and holding the glove, man. What can I say? Beamed off my dome, and here we are. I've got a nice little goose egg.
Can we see it?
Oh, well, I mean, if you want to.
Does it hurt?
It don't feel good. It felt like every bit of a 109-mile-an-hour fastball, home run ball, yes.
Did we get the ball afterwards? Or?
No, it skipped over the fence, but Josh Pearson, man, he's such a great guy. He came and tossed me their toss ball that they do in between innings, so he tossed it to me. I guess probably Friday I'll go get Tommy White to sign it for me and maybe kiss my Bobo.
I'll just tell you, the second you heard this,
I mean, it was on a rope.
You knew it would be good.
He sounds like he's going to say, I got to scan my cat here soon, man. You got to figure out what's going on. I don't want to be mean, but he sounds like a dude that can just eat baseball to the dome like it ain't nothing.
Right?
Like he can line up in the trenches right now.
Corey from LSU is a guy I can get behind. Like this guy just sounds, it's very, it's basically the 8 Steve energy from Corey.
Mm-hmm.
Only in this case, rather than putting together a beer snake, Corey has just been hit in the head by a home run ball.
He sounds like a great time after the game at the local pub. That's the type of guy you want to hang out with when it's all said and done. Great interview. We should do more of these. Like when the guy got caught at Dodger Stadium switching the baseball and throwing a ball he brought with him back after a home run. Great interview. Right here, we're down in, this is LSU, right? Great interview down at LSU. We should do more of these.
All right. Next up in the timeline, we've got more potential names for Utah's NHL team. These are the following trademarks that have been filed. Tell me if you like any of these. Utah Mammoth. Yeah?
Utah Mammoth, no.
Okay, okay, no. Okay, that's fine. I mean, it's prehistoric. It's you know, taking a look back. Okay?
Utah Mammoth.
Utah Ice.
Ah, too simple.
Okay, but Natty, you can have Ice Spice perform at the game.
You can go Natty Ice, but you can't buy beer on Sunday, out.
Utah Yetis.
I kind of like the Yetis. Utah Yetis.
It's not bad.
It flows, Utah Yetis.
Utah Yeti. And here's the thing. Immediate sponsorship with Yeti. The little, like, they're like a competitor with Stanley Cup, right?
But Stanley's a huge thing in Utah.
Yeah, but guess what? Yeti can automatically go there and be like, hi, there's already the name connection. We'll pay you a ton. Yeah, work a deal out.
They're just as good as Stanley Cups, too.
How do you know that?
Because I have both.
Okay. You can have automatically the mascot is a Yeti. It makes obvious sense.
Utah Yeti sounds good.
You know, you say that, but I haven't read you the fourth name.
All right, what you got?
The Utah Outlaws.
Nah.
No?
Ain't nothing,
I feel like that's
ain't
cool.
Nothing outlaw about a Mormon state. And don't sell alcohol on Sundays. Outlaw. Oh, we're going to drink. Oh, our beer is watered down. We're outlaws. Nah.
Are you drinking Diet Coke right now?
Get out of here,
outlaw.
Man. Outlaw. Outlaw. You're right. In-laws.
No. In-laws. I think outlaws is pretty cool.
How?
I don't know. Because it
think
sounds
of Utah? Wild West.
Yeah, I think of Wild
Curtis,
Wild West.
You have family in Utah.
Will Smith.
Right, I do. There's nothing outlawish about Utah at all.
I don't know. I think you could.
Correct.
First of all, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, Jen Shah is an outlaw, one of the former castmates on that show, currently in prison. So
yeah, so you have a middle-aged
woman. That's white-collar crime, though, right?
Yeah, it's very white-collar crime.
She's at Camp Snoopy. She ain't in no prison. She's got a nice little
bunk
bed.
She's in the same prison. Who was that? Is it Elizabeth? What's the name of the woman?
Oh, Elizabeth Smart?
No, not Elizabeth. No. What is the name of the woman who had... She had another company that was a scam, and she told people that they would do these blood draws, and they would take the blood draws, and they would test people for all these things. She got like $1 billion in funding or something like that, or, you know, public, whatever, stock, whatever. I don't care. She defrauded, and people found it out eventually. Anyways, she's there, too.
Yeah.
They're both there and they're friends.
There's
pictures of them hanging out.
Comfortable shoes. The beds are soft. It's different.
Oh, God. I want to find the name of this company. What was this? Her name is Elizabeth something, and she has a very deep voice, and she was obsessed with Steve Jobs. So she would wear a black turtleneck, and people would make fun of her because she would make her voice this deep.
Elizabeth Holmes?
Yes.
Here's a good one.
Find video of her speaking. Her voice is very, it's not natural. She tries to talk like this.
425 says, if she is in prison, is she still an outlaw? No, she's caught.
Oh, wow. That is
she's caught.
That
she's
is
in jail.
A point and a half. That is a very good
makes
point.
Makes too much sense.
Last one here, Jaden Daniels. Elizabeth, Theranos was the company, right? Yeah, and it was this huge scam. I don't know where we went with this. Anyways, I was going to say they're both outlaws, but then that texter let me know that they're not outlaws if they are quite literally in prison.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. Jaden Daniels' mom was determined to have provided impermissible benefits to recruits while her son was ASU's starting quarterback.
What are we talking about?
Have you ever seen a parent be involved in this kind of stuff from the payment side? Like, I don't think we've ever seen a parent be the reason for recruiting
violation. I've never heard
about
it, but I always assume that for any time you hear about recruiting violations, it just goes deep. Like, I've always assumed that, like, boosters have been involved with certain things. I can't think of a story where a parent was directly involved.
Well, I think now we know why Jaden Daniels transferred from ASU.
Yeah. The 247 Sports lists out... ASU agreed to disassociate for 5 years with Regina Jackson, the mother of former ASU quarterback Jaden Daniels. I know, we can't sit with you, who won the Heisman Trophy at LSU, widely expected to be selected in the first round. She was shown to have paid for flights and lodging to ASU recruits who impermissibly visited during the period which it was allowed. I gotta say, I don't care.
Nah, not at all. So what?
So she paid for flights. I know that it violates NCAA rules.
She got money.
I've always thought that those rules were dumb.
Pay for flights.
Anytime it was like, a coach paid for the flight for a kid to go home and see his family for Thanksgiving, that is an NCAA violation has always been stupid.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. All right, you guys. Again, we are going to get back to the Mariners, back to baseball, coming up at noon with Xavier Scruggs. Before we get to it, there's been all this talk about Michael Penix and Bo Nix being older quarterbacks. But how old is too old for a first-round quarterback? Is there any truth to this history? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Where Michael Penix will be drafted tomorrow, my God, in NFL's round one of the draft is largely determined by his health history. However, as Mina Kimes, ESPN, pointed out to us yesterday, it's not just injuries.
You definitely have a case for top three, certainly top four. I think with Penix, it's not just the injury history that gives me and I suspect NFL teams some pause. He is an older prospect, and I know we can laugh at, like, what's the difference between 24 and 21 or what up, but it actually does make a big difference.
So here's the thing. You can hear that from Mina, and you can think, oh, my God, Mina, love ya, but what does it matter? He's going to be 24 at the start of the year. That's so young. Yeah, in real life, it's young. But there are numbers to back up Mina's point. Jason Lisk of TeamRankings.com compiled the ages of the oldest quarterbacks taken in the first round since 2010, along with some possible 2024 first-round quarterbacks. You got Whedon, who at 28 and a half was drafted, still wild. Nick's next at 24. Penix there at 24. Would be the third oldest. These other names, I mean, Joe Burrow is the most successful out of all of them. Pickett, Tannehill, Burrow, Wentz, Ponder, EJ Manuel, Baker Mayfield you'd throw in there. And then you've got Jake Locker, though Mayfield 23, Locker 22. That's when I kind of started to stop reading through.
Ageism. My man, he's 23. He'll be 24 in May.
Yeah. A Gemini.
Now, you want your quarterback to come in and be a leader amongst grown men.
Yes.
Average NFL team, I guess the age will say 28 years old. You got some old heads, if you want to call it old for football, that are above 30. So you're saying you want this young fella to come in and have the respect of these older fellas, to walk into the locker room and have the respect and be a leader, get in the huddle, take charge of all of that. You would think having a year or two on your competition would be an advantage because you're a bit more sure of yourself. Now, 24 is still young. I didn't know exactly who I was, me personally, until like 25, 26. Like, okay, I'm set. I'm comfortable with who I am. But these guys are obviously built different. They're quarterbacks. Naturally, they're better leaders. They're more mature than the average person, for the most part, until you get a Johnny Manziel in there that jacks it all up for everybody, right? But you're asking him to lead an organization, and age gives you what? Experience and confidence, and he has a whole bunch of snaps over these other guys when it comes to entering the NFL. So I'm looking at this, and I go, that's funny, man, because – you know, you can get a guy like C.J. Stroud, who I think is one of the more confident quarterbacks I've ever seen at such a young age, and it works for him. But there are some guys who need to kind of develop and get into those roles. And why? Because they're younger with less life experience. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying a 21-year-old can't do it, but I am saying that a 24-year-old or an older quarterback is more likely to be comfortable in his own skin and lead an organization. So I think it just comes down to arm talent. Yeah. Now, drafting someone at 28, I mean, I think that's a bit of a stretch. Who's a Winky was also, why isn't Winky on this list?
He's in the article.
It was just 2010.
Yeah. All right. But I got the combined records for a couple of these guys and he's on there.
Yeah. So I get the concern of the age, but I also look at the positive and understand that an older quarterback who has a bunch of snaps, who's been through a lot, can offer something that a younger quarterback can't, and vice versa. I see both sides of the argument.
I agree, and it sounds like I'm about to argue against Penix because of his age, but that's not what I'm doing. It's just going to sound like it for a minute. A separate article from Adam Rittenberg. He wrote this a couple years ago, and he did mention Weeking. He mentioned a couple other guys, and he looked at the history of some of those older quarterbacks and said, look, it's not encouraging. However, this part of the article was interesting to me. He said, before the draft, NFL teams are tasked to identify, analyze, and scrutinize every detail about prospects. Mm-hmm. And one NFL scout said his organization puts an alert on the profiles, quarterback or not, of players who enter draft weekend age 25 or older. Michael Penix will not be 25 or older, worth mentioning. The age alert isn't a do not draft warning, but it requires the team to dig a bit deeper and find context around the age. He's a 25-year-old quarterback. Why? That's the biggest thing I would ask, one scout said. Stetson Bennett's why is, well, he wasn't really recruited. Then he went to junior college and came back to Georgia. Hooker is a six-year player. Why wasn't he good enough to come out after 2021? What the age question does is just simulate questions. It makes you ask why. So that's what we're going to do with Michael Penix, because I think Michael Penix's why is not one of concern about play. Like, if you look at a guy and he's entering the draft and he's, 24 years old, there are guys that are entering the draft older because they truly didn't have the resume, did not have the year to be able to come out and be confident they could be a first-round pick. That's not Michael Penix. Michael Penix had four season-ending injuries.
Yeah.
And he wanted to prove he could stay healthy. And he also wanted to be able to compete on this amazing team and go to a national title game. Like, his why to me comes back to health. And that doesn't make me concerned about him as a player.
No, I think it's it was important for him to go back and prove that he can stay healthy again. And especially you're looking at last year's draft too, when you got Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young. I mean, after only having one real good year of success in college football, he's not going to jump into the pool with those sharks and try to compare that resume. Mm-hmm. No, he's going to go back and say, look, one, let me prove that I can stay healthy. And two, let me prove that I can do it again and gain more experience. So I don't like that argument, especially when you're dealing with a 23, about to be 24-year-old. And if you're looking at Wheaton, he's 28. Going to be 29, and you're looking at that big number 30 and saying, all right, guys start to decline typically at this age, even at the quarterback spot. I understand it, but I think this is an advantage for Michael Penix.
I do too.
I think it's an advantage that he has this experience. He's a confident individual. All these quarterbacks are confident. Again, quarterbacks are just built different. I got a scholarship offer to be a quarterback. Not my personality. I don't want that responsibility. These guys love the responsibility and thrive in those situations. So I see his age as only being a plus. At the age of 24, you get to 28, 29, 30. Then I'm like, all right, there's some concerns here. How long is he going to last? How much can he change his game? Because you reach a certain age and you just are who you are as an athlete. I think at 24, he'll be fine. But again, it's just a way to, again, separate money, separate draft status. If he was 22, he'd for sure be a top three pick.
Well, and look, what's the draft about? It's about trying to make the most important decision that you'll make that year, the biggest investment you'll make that year, based on limited information.
Yeah.
You are going to try desperately to find anything you can. You're going to talk to a janitor at the facility. You're going to talk to a family friend. You're going to talk to, a tutor. Like, you are going to try to find everything and any red flag you possibly can.
Yeah.
And if in the NFL, increasing age is already a red flag for any player, the older you get in the NFL, the less valuable you become. It's just a tough truth. Of course, age is going to be something they look at for quarterbacks, even when that age is only 23 going on 24. But I think the problem with this is the pool you're looking at of older quarterbacks is going to include guys who just weren't good. Just frankly needed 5 years to put together a good resume.
And you're essentially trying to get two contracts out of an NFL player.
Yeah.
You get two contracts, you're fine. Penix gets two contracts, he'll be 31, 32. And he'll be okay. But yeah, I understand what they're doing and why they do it, but I also see the advantages of being an older quarterback.
I will say Coach Prime Deion Sanders, he's obviously at a rival school, but still has his back. He says, I can't stand the way the mainstream media and draft experts have looked by, and looked past Michael Penix Jr. This is ridiculous. This young man had a great year and one average game versus the number one defense in college football. Somebody stand up and tell the truth, please. Hashtag
Coach
Prime.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Getting back to the Mariners next. Don't go anywhere.